Good morning. This is Corporate Conversations on Atlanta Business Radio, and I'm Dawn Ely, here with my producer, Lee Cantor. Good morning, Lee.
Good morning, Dawn. It's great to see you again.
Thank you. Great to be here. You know, we have a really exciting show for me because it's a topic that I don't know much about, but I'm very interested in. It's telecommunications and software. What are the successes and challenges, and how is software impacting this traditional industry? Our guests are Randy Berlin, president of DiscountCall.com, Inc., Michael Beaton, CEO of Unicom Connect, and Andrea Busi, CEO of IntelliText. Our show today is sponsored by who, Lee?
Today's show is sponsored by Palladium Chief Legal Officers, or CLOs, and they offer highly experienced divisional and general counsels as your in-house CLO at budgetable flat-rate fees on a part-time or interim basis. Your company gains the assistance of a dedicated CLO without the cost of having an expensive full-time executive legal employee. A CLO brings to your business in-depth knowledge of your industry, of the players in your industry, their businesses, and how the various legal and business issues affect your industry and your business. At Palladium, we see the possibilities, not just the liabilities. You can find out more at www.palladiumclos.com.
Fantastic. Well, you know, it's interesting. I had no idea how long software had been already in the telecom industry, but apparently it's been in great demand steadily over the last 20 years, including now being outsourced to India, trying to put together all different types of applications from all these acronyms that I don't know, you know, CRM and VPN and VoIP and all kinds of applications, which it's for me, it's all Greek. But now apparently you can have software perform the functions of what was done traditionally by the inflexible and fixed hardware of the industry's infrastructure. And interestingly enough, the federal government is actually now looking at today's 911 versus the next generation of 911, an emergency response. You know, whereas historically all calls were over telephone analog lines, where now there's so many different types of communication devices sent over IP networks, and instead of just voice, now you've got data sharing, and but yet you've all got it through a legacy routing system. So for me, I'm really curious as to how all these new needs and software applications are functioning in this traditional industry with an infrastructure that may or may not be keeping up with development. So I'm really excited to hear about what our guests have to talk about. And Randy, I'd like to introduce you. Randy Berlin is president of DiscountCall.com, Inc., and Randy is the founder and president of DiscountCall.com, and he's been building relationships since 1996. In his role, he oversees the sales, marketing, and delivery of telecommunication services to all of Discount Call's Atlanta and national business customers. It's an organization of employees, agents, contractors, and vendors reaching most cities in the continental U.S. Berlin is a graduate of Virginia Tech. I'm a UVA grad, so sorry, Randy. It makes
me
choke
right now.
Every time I have to say that.
me too.
With a degree in sports management. So, Randy, tell us, as your company tends to be an aggregator and a solution provider, what are you seeing in the industry right now in terms of where software is affecting the industry, how it's going, and what is its challenges and successes?
It's an exciting time. There's a plentiful of innovation. There's a lot of improvements across the hardware systems, and it's pretty exciting. Even in this recession, it's very, very exciting. I know the guests here, the other guests, Andrea and Michael, will definitely allude to that.
Can you talk a little bit about exactly what you do at Discount Call?
Sure. We sell phone systems, mainly IP systems, to small, medium-sized customers here in Atlanta, as well as the United States. Because of software, we can actually see our systems all across the country and make simple changes and programming changes and monitor their systems. We also bring together the cabling, which we need to hook up all the hardware, obviously, and we also do the services, which is your high-speed internet, which could be anything from DSL, broadband, all the way up to T1 service.
What are you seeing with respect to what customers are looking for and what kind of solutions you are able to provide them, and how are they working? Are they struggling, or are they pretty effective these days?
We deal with two types of customers. One is the typical business owner. which is just looking to improve their business. They're not looking for anything specific. It's our job to kind of bring that to the table. And the IT people that we deal with, which is usually part of the organizations, they're looking to either be better than their competition or more innovative.
And what role do you see software playing in what these companies are looking for in their telecom solutions?
It's pivotal because even all of our systems run off software. So as demand of more applications is driven, so is our need for our services as well as the hardware needs to keep up with this. It's kind of like, to keep it in a simple standpoint, years ago we couldn't watch a movie on our current computer. So the hardware industry had to kind of catch up so we can kind of see everything.
Are you seeing that? Are you seeing that the hardware is not quite catching up with the software applications capability?
Absolutely, yes.
Can you tell us a little bit more about that? Can you show us or tell us some examples of some situations you've come across where it was a challenge?
There's been a couple of different scenarios. I'll have to definitely think of one. But it's more of when software comes out, let's just say it's a new application, and if the hardware can't do it, then we have to absolutely, instead of telling the potential customer, sorry, it can't be done, we have to go find hardware to kind of match up. And usually the software innovator or provider will help bring that to the table. So that's kind of where we get the integration from.
So you're seeing the software developers have to find the hardware capability to support their application before they actually come to the market? Is that what you're saying?
In a lot of ways, yes, because if they make it and there's not a market for it, then they're sitting on real fun code for them.
I see, yeah. So where are you seeing the telecom industry going as the software companies continue to expand their services and applications and the customer needs?
From actually a carrier standpoint, is bandwidth, bandwidth, bandwidth. If they want to deliver higher bandwidth throughput at a lower cost, people are demanding 10, 20 megs, which pretty much can run Fortune 500 type companies. We're seeing graphics companies constantly need a lot more bandwidth and things of that nature to run all of their applications and have remote workers.
Mm-hmm. When you find a solution for a company, are you looking at a challenging situation to try to integrate different applications with, are they standard or non-standard types of, code and formats?
Most of the time, it's the software has to fit the hardware. If it can't, then we're automatically kicked out of the door. But for the most part, the interoperability between the software that we deal with is pretty standard across the across our industry, no question about it.
Oh, well, that's good.
Yeah. We wouldn't have a business if that wasn't the case.
Are you finding anybody actually looking for the traditional hardwire, just basic phone service, or is everybody looking for something else and more sophisticated applications? Do you even sell the old stuff anymore?
Yes, you have to. It's funny because do people still buy old cars and people still go to the old restaurants? Absolutely. So we have to have it there. More to give the customer a choice, but a lot of times the systems right now that are made by our manufacturer, which is Samsung, absolutely can be upgraded to voice over IP and handle all the software. So even if they just get the nuts and bolts of a traditional, what we call, I'm going to throw three more letters at you, TDM, which is time division multiplexing, which is the phone lines that we know it today, and not IP, then we have to be able to deliver that. But what's really in demand is remote workers and a lot more applications from the phones, from the desk phones. People want their desk phones to be exactly like their cell phones.
Interesting. And so when you say they want their desk phones to be just like their cell phones, what does that mean to them, do you think?
Be able to check email, be able to be in constant contact with the office, be able to send pictures, be able to chat, send texting, everything.
Okay.
Across the board. It's really, really neat to see the hardware providers keep up. But Samsung has a unique position in the marketplace because they also sell cell phones. They're one of the biggest in the world. So they have a good take on what the customer needs and what their needs are going to be in the future.
So for these hardware suppliers, are they really having to try to model the cell phone environment? And is it really becoming more of a remote-based industry?
I think if you talk to any hardware provider in the R&D department, they don't want to touch software. I think they want to be able to cohabitate properly, because I think if it, in a competitive standpoint, they would get their butts kicked. So they would have to be able to integrate with what's out there in the software world, no question about it. But our manufacturer does have some software pieces, only from a cost perspective. It's just to keep the small customer from having to have a server and having to have someone to be able to operate it. They can embed that into the hardware. So that's kind of where there's a little bit of competition, but it's not for the mass.
So you're saying the competition is more in the hosting environment? Is that what you, did I interpret that right?
The competition is on a couple different levels, but I think it's more the software providers need the hardware and vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not so much a competition. It's more of everyone has to live under the same roof.
So are there forums or groups or efforts being made to have the software and hardware providers get together and discuss where the software guys are going and what do the hardware guys need to do to catch up or keep up?
I'm not the person to ask. We have the Geek Squad back at our office that you can talk to. I just sell what's in demand, and I base everything off what the customers actually want.
Where do you see the industry going? Do you see it continuing to develop higher and higher sophistication levels?
Yes. I think software is going to really, really drive the hardware portion of the industry. I see a lot more consolidation. I see a lot more growth. Even in this environment, people still need bigger, faster, for less.
Do you think the existing infrastructure, whether it's the cellular environment or the hardwire environment, is sufficient to keep up with that, or are there going to be some upgrades needed for those environments as well?
Oh, but a simple question. They're not sufficient, but I mean, how many times we get frustrated when we're going down the road, an important phone call, and we get knocked off the cell? Whether it was because we were switching towers or we went under a tunnel or things like that. So the networks are set up to handle as they're upgraded, so it's a must. It's an absolute must. I remember a couple years ago, we couldn't do a lot of situations with using the internet for a lot of applications because they didn't trust the internet was going to stay up for the full 8 hours per week, you know, on a long-term basis. So even if it went down one time, you know, a reboot would take a couple minutes, and that could put the company at an extreme disadvantage. So a lot of things had to wait for the internet to be a lot stronger at the customer premise as well as at the carrier level.
Do you see the internet now as being sufficient, or is it continuing to need to be upgraded?
Continually need to be upgraded.
Yeah.
And that's both from a hardware standpoint and the carrier standpoint, no question. There's still hiccups in the system, but I think you won't get a lot of complaints because, let's face it, we're getting a lot more now than we ever have for a lot less.
Interesting. Well, what would you demand or ask of a software company to ensure better chance of survival in the telecom arena and to continue to meet the needs of the customers?
I think it's a couple of different things. It's more making sure that we or an integrator or the hardware provider understands what they're trying to accomplish. It makes it a heck of a lot easier. A lot of software type companies will write the code and throw it out there and say, and just to see what sticks. So they're actually using that situation to see what's going to be the demand in the marketplace, where we can almost kind of tell them this is what customers are looking for, at least help them out. We would love something that enhances the hardware and to at least bridge two different pieces. Whenever I think of software, I always think of the bridging of two pieces of hardware or enhancing that one piece of hardware. And then I always would love to say, if I ever sat in some of these meetings, is stop hogging all the resources of the systems.
Okay, well, great. Well, I'd like to open it up now for questions from our fellow panelists, Michael and Andrea, as well as Lee. Do you all have any questions of Randy?
I'm good so far, thank you.
Okay.
Now, I have a question about the Verizon, Google things that are in the news. Can you talk a little bit about that?
You'll have to give me a little bit more information.
The Google and Verizon, there's something called net neutrality where the bandwidth, they're trying to reorder how the bandwidth gets shared, I guess.
I got you. Google is one of the smartest companies I've ever seen. They have a marketing plan and a business model for the next 200 years. So anytime Google would want something, you'd have to take a look at the benefits and what's actually possibly being outweighed by those benefits is some of the downfall. There are interesting scenarios out there in the blogs and things where Google is absolutely trying to deliver that internet and control the whole piece. But right now, what people always need to understand is the internet is just a bunch of phone lines and servers on the end of those phone lines. And so Google is not even close to that. They're more on the software side. So I don't know the exact specifics, Lee, but I can say that it looks like those two juggernauts are going to have to get along and kind of grow as they go. And then I'm not the first to say it. I'm not trying to affect stock price. But if they're talking, there's possibly a merge somewhere down the road, too. Merge talks.
Wow.
Very interesting.
My only question for you, Randy, is have you had anybody that you've come across who said, we're not looking for the hardware anymore? You know, we're really looking for a completely wireless base in our office environment.
Every day. we actually, as an entrepreneur on my side, we actually have specific procedures and policies that we go by. And we're actually, it's a pretty interesting scenario of how I learned this from a couple different mentors. And our job is to sell what's going to work at a price point that's going to be in demand at something that can be supported. So it's not for me or our company to decide that hosted or wireless is going to be better, because we will end up selling this. I could be at the show in 2 years and say we're a fully hosted provider and this is what we're selling. It's kind of like a Walmart scenario. Is it Coke? Is it Pepsi? I'll tell you where they're making their most money. It's going to be the middle shelf. Right now, it's kind of the VCR. It's a beta VHS scenario right now, hosted versus non-hosted. A lot of people think hosted and wireless are going to win out. What people don't factor into that equation is the government and taxes. Right now, a lot of it's not taxed, and Uncle Sam's going to want their piece soon, so it might knock out some of the benefits. Hopefully that answered your question, Andrew.
It did. Thank you.
I've got a question for Randy. Randy, when you look in the United States today, one in four homes now no longer has a landline, and that is dropping consistently. Everything is being replaced by cellular. How's that affecting your market?
It's actually enhancing. One is because we don't sell to the residential market, but you still need access to what we call the PSTN. So there's my second acronym of the day, Dawn, the public network. So we need access to that network, whether it's going to be from a third party, from your phone company, or from even the IP hosting company. So even though we're seeing less phone lines, which alludes to what I was talking about before of less revenue for tax dollars, we're actually seeing it's being far outweighed by all the different applications and all the different cool things we can do with the desktop phones, with servers, with IP, multi-locations, and remote workers. It's pretty neat. So it's actually affecting us in a good way.
Thank you.
Very good. Well, Randy, why don't you tell us a little bit more about the kind of customers that you're looking for and a little bit about your company and how we get in touch with you?
Sure. We've been in business since 96, and we obviously weren't selling IP systems back in 96. We've kind of evolved with technology. So we sell the basic phone system, but mainly right now what's hot is the IP phone systems for one location all the way up to hundreds of locations. Because of software, we can see our systems remotely. So I always want our business owner to think about this. Think about the days when you're waiting for the air conditioning guy or waiting for the electrician to come by, and they give you the window of 11 to 4, and they get there at 5:04. We can do things in a real time because of software, and because we can see our system, we can make all of our changes and all of our monitoring remotely. So that actually attracts companies across the country for us to sell and service their hardware needs on both the phone system and the carrier services. So actually a real good customer for us is usually customers anywhere between 20 and 200 employees at one location with a telecom manager, with an IT person, or them contracted out.
Okay, great. And how do we get in touch with you?
A couple different ways, but I'll just give you the phone number. It's 404-844-6800. And then obviously on the internet at discountcall1word.com.
Wonderful. Well, Randy, you've set the stage for us to go to our next guest, Andrea Bussey. She is CEO of IntelliText, Inc., and she's chairman of the board for the Safe Text Seal and is a sought-after speaker nationwide for her knowledge and success as the industry leader for image-based texting. Prior to IntelliText, Andrea was mostly recognized for her patented achievements with MyCustomDay.com, a virtual concierge service, and Direct Access, an advertising distribution company. Ms. Bussey has worked in New York, Boston, Chicago, and Florida, but calls Atlanta home, where she resides with her husband and children. Andrea, it's great to have you here on our show today.
Thank you. Thanks to be here.
As your company tends to focus on the software application side of things, based on our conversation already with Randy, where are you trying to go with your services for the telecom industry, and where do you see the software role playing?
Well, we're finding that more and more, not just the larger corporations, but small businesses alike, are looking for more tangible results. You know, the ROI, the return on their investment, has to be something that they can see immediately. And so they're searching. They're actively looking for something to do that beyond or separate from their traditional advertising or marketing efforts, and that's where this definitely comes in.
So what are you seeing as the ways that software is enhancing this traditional industry? You know, there's so many things that Randy mentioned and that there are existing out there, from hosted services to cell phone usage to IP. Where do you see software playing the greatest role or having the greatest challenges?
Well, really, I think it's all about flexibility. With the software, you have so much flexibility to use it the way your business model and your industry dictates. So you can be hyper-local, you know, and extremely focused and targeted in your efforts, whatever that may be based on your industry. And this software, and especially the evolution of the software that we're seeing now in telecom, is delivering that faster than ever and more efficiently than we've ever seen.
Can you give me an example of that?
Sure. For example, being able to contact or reach out to your sales force, maybe you've got, say, 1,500 sales reps on the ground, possibly even nationwide. Up till now, you've had to rely on, you know, calling them or email. And now, through texting specifically and the software that coincides, you have the ability now to instantly send out a broadcast type of message to them, but more importantly, have an interactive communication back and forth where you're actually able to send them MMS or the visual pictures across the text of maybe real-time products that you'd like them to immediately start showing to clients. That accessibility and that real-time interaction just simply wasn't available even in the last year.
Do you have any case studies that you can share with us of some of the functionality that some of your customers wanted that you were able to provide that showed great success even in the existing infrastructure?
Oh, sure. We have several where, using the texting technology, people are typically familiar with SMS text, which, again, is just the words. Now, what we specialize in and what we see the market moving rapidly toward is MMS, which is the multimedia. Of course, you've got video texting as well. And the reason why that's so important is if you're couponing or doing promotional offers, people don't like to have to remember to bring in a paper coupon. Many businesses don't like to be thought of that way. They think it discounts their brand or their concept. So having it right there on their phone in a full color ad enables the business to keep the image perception that they want and the consumer to be able to walk right in and show their phone. It's a beautiful marriage.
You know, I've actually done that myself on several occasions where I either forgot or didn't want to, or my printer wasn't working, and instead of wasting a piece of paper, I just resent myself an email to saved it so that I could go into an environment to say, yes, I'm a member of this, or here's my confirmation. And I can speak for my own self that it was an extremely convenient way to utilize that technology. Anything in particular that you have found was a challenge for you or your customers, either because of the existing infrastructure or that technology wasn't quite where you wanted it to be yet?
Yes. Recently, we have looked into proximity marketing, where as you drive by or walk within a certain number of feet from an entity or business, it would actually ping your phone and alert you to some type of a special or something going on at that business. And the United States just simply is not ready for this technology yet. We found that only 28% of cell phones are equipped, really, or downloaded with their Bluetooth technology to be able to receive this. In other markets, specifically Asia, they're considerably ahead of us in that arena. So that's been a challenge. But in other areas, we've been able to circumvent some of those challenges with traditional hardware, again, with, you know, software coming in to save the day. We've done everything from contests, you know, via text. We've done, of course, polling and surveys. You've seen recent, you know, even elections, won or lost in the balance of texting in some cases. Announcements, you know, real-time ability to reach out to folks and to be able to react, whereas before you were very limited in those 11th hour situations, as well as, of course, video demonstrations. If you're able to send a text message with a video demonstration, think about, you know, what it's kind of what, you know, some of the online meeting spaces have done for travel. It's now able to do for your business as well. So those are just some of the applications that text has been able to overcome the traditional hardware downside.
Is there a demographic sweet spot for text users?
Well, you know, I think the younger generation obviously embraces the texting. You know, I think they text more than they talk. But what we've found is that 26% of 50 years old and older demographic are actually coming on every year with the texting. So they're joining the bandwagon, like it or not. I think, you know, they're coming along. So we're finding that more and more people are open to it across the demographics. I think moms, more than anyone else, are very plugged in because they're using their social media sites as well as their phone becomes their central hub for everything. And they're the most connected, you know, from figuring out their kids' schedules to their husband's, you know, dinner parties.
Interesting. And, you know, some of the things that you just mentioned, we've crossed from being an internal company logistical convenience to actually now using this technology for marketing purposes, so that it's becoming a tool to reach more people faster, better. Is that what a lot of people are now getting into, or is that still evolving?
It is still evolving, but it's absolutely where everything is going. Texting is now where email marketing was 15 years ago. There's a 96% open rate with text messages versus an email, which, of course, is, you know, 3 to 8%, depending on how opted in they are. So with a 96% open rate and with people constantly having their phone, you know, right on their hip or on their person, the effectiveness is just blowing people's minds. And again, then you've got that ROI factor that comes right in.
That's really interesting. And I know that some of the carriers of the cell phones are still charging for text messages. Do you think that that will ultimately go away and that we'll end up having a flat rate or no extra charge for unlimited text?
Absolutely. It's happening daily, and the public is simply demanding it. So I absolutely see that going away and going to a flat rate.
Wonderful. Now, you mentioned internationally that we are not quite at the same pace as other parts of the world, specifically Asia. And that's a very interesting statement that you made for me, because we, most of us here in the U.S., think of the Americans as being sort of more advanced in terms of business and communications, things like that. Are you seeing that the hardware isn't keeping up, or the software itself isn't keeping up, or is it just a cultural acceptance that's not at the same pace?
I think it's probably D, all the above. Specifically, our phones, when we purchase them at the store, are not configured the same way. The hardware is just not exactly the same. But more importantly, the software is more limited. We do have the FCC, and we've got very strict anti-spamming rules. That's a huge problem for them. So it's not that they necessarily have the advantage or the benefit, because they're having serious problems over there with spam that we don't have, at least not yet. Right now, it's kind of similar to the Wild Wild West. You know, the cell phones are open market right now, and being able to text in from your business to your target consumer, it's wide open. There's absolutely no restriction at this moment. So we as a company, for example, have to be very careful to be responsible and be diligent about not spamming people, because those restrictions just aren't there yet like they are in other areas.
Mm-hmm. Are there the same providers providing the technology to Asia that are providing here? So is there a moment where it could be easily changed, where we could get the same hardware and software applications here in the U.S. as in Asia?
I think we'll progress very rapidly. Yes, there's a lot of crossover and a lot of international work between, you know, the businesses here are doing business there and vice versa. So I think it's just a cultural issue. It's a matter of time bringing our phones kind of up to speed. But again, doing it responsibly, doing it with the care that I don't think was afforded to the consumers in Asia, we will need here through the FCC.
Do you think that standards have had any issue with us as far as acceptability here in the market? I mean, GSM has been sort of prevalent throughout the world, and we've had a couple of standards. Has that played into your market?
Yes, it absolutely does. We've got to be cognizant of that when we're developing new software technologies to relate to the masses. We have to design them specifically with those thoughts in mind. So we're very careful to stay within those guidelines.
Does software, in your opinion, make the technology and the capabilities more or less expensive than traditional?
Well, I think when you've got new software, usually most of the cost is absorbed up front. So, yes, you will have incurring costs, but software is developing so rapidly that as soon as something else comes along, then you're now absorbing that cost. So I think it ends up flattening out. But what happens with the software is it continues to evolve to the consumer in a little faster rate than the hardware does. So they end up balancing in the end.
What industries are the early adopters with texting?
Well, several. Restaurants have really come on board with it because they see a much better return, of course, than, you know, traditional media and traditional print. Retail, of course, is huge, and I anticipate that this holiday season we will see a large jump in the involvement with texting from retailers because they have the ability, again, to very to personalize and very micro-target the people that they want, the consumers that they need, as opposed to billboards or other forms, other media forms that just aren't speaking directly to their target consumer. So retail, restaurants, and really any type of service organization that needs a better tool to reach out to their end users for communication, loyalty, and retention.
I don't think that there's a better media for that in terms of the immediacy where, like, say you're a restaurant and it's raining or something, you can just send a blast out to your people in your text list and to get traffic in your store immediately. And I don't think there's another method that can do that.
That's right. Well, and the benefits, too, are, at least with us, you've got the ability to schedule your text messages. I mean, you know your promotions that you've got coming up for the holidays or for, you know, Taco Tuesdays or whatever it is that you do. So you can kind of schedule it, you know, set it and forget it, as we say. The system's going to automatically send out these text reminders to people when it's the most proper timing for them, where it's going to do the most good. But at the same time, you can be very reactive. We've seen this in political campaigns where, again, at the 11th hour, you get a direct mail piece in your mail blasting your favorite candidate, and you start to question. If they had the immediacy of being able to send out a text message, you know, rebuting that and saying, well, actually, let me tell you the whole story. You know, again, you could save an election just by that. And, you know, on a rainy day, all of a sudden it's indoor play places. They send out, you know, a text message. They'll fill their room. It's very, very reactive on a very short timetable. We show that the average response time for opening a text message is 6 minutes.
Interesting. So what are you seeing as the continued development of this industry? Where do you see it going?
Well, I think people rely more and more heavily each year on their cell phones to do everything for them. And texting is the most immediate way to react and then respond. So interactive texting, I think, will become an integral part of every business eventually. So the ones that are still kind of holding on to the old methodology, I think, will give way to texting eventually. And the ones that do it faster are the ones that will gain more market share because, again, it's wide open right now. So it's always better to be first to market with that new technology than it is to be last.
Interesting. So what are the biggest challenges you see that are facing companies like yourself that is primarily software developers? What do you want from the hardware providers?
Well, I see our biggest challenge potentially being regulation, mm-hmm. you know, or being government. It just, you know, one law could change the landscape of our industry dramatically. But as far as hardware, I think it's just a matter of keeping up. you've got kind of a runaway cart situation in texting, and the people that are doing it right will continue to gain market share by leaps and bounds. And just like Randy said, I think eventually the government's going to say, hey, I want a piece of that. So regulation and law is probably the biggest challenge.
Are you seeing the hardware providers lagging a little bit so that you're challenged a little bit by what you're already got accomplished but can't quite get it implemented the way you like it?
I'd say that's probably a fair statement. I think they're doing a good job trying to come along, but it's very difficult, again, to keep up with that runaway horse. We have found through our advancements in our particular software technology that we're constantly faced with the challenge of, now we've got it, now how's it going to run? You know, what hardware are we going to apply to it? And just like Randy said, we very often are the ones that go out and pursue and look for hardware solutions to match our system capabilities, because it doesn't really matter how great our software solution, our technology solution is, if there's no platform to run it on.
Excellent point. Go ahead.
I have one question, Andrea. Sure. Fantastic job. It's actually a two-part question. The first question is what's more important in your mind? Is the coming of the 4G network, or would, if you could choose, would it be better or faster or bigger hardware? And then I'll ask you my second question in a second.
Okay. Well, I think 4G, again, is inevitable, you know, for helping us be able to move some of these smaller entities, especially with leaps and bounds forward. So that's hugely important. But I think immediately, if I had to pick today, I would choose better hardware because people, you know, the 3G network obviously is sufficient. 4G would be better. But with 3G, we are able and capable of delivering and bringing what we need. Now we just have to make the user's experience so simple and so easy that they really can't help but jump on board.
What's after 4G?
5G? Huh.
Boy, I guess so. Boy, if I wish I knew.
4.5G?
That crystal ball, that'd be great.
Thank you.
Sure. And if I may, one thing I wanted to mention, too, was in the world of texting, people are very familiar with short codes. You know, text the word such and such to 12345. These short codes have done a good job as kind of a first generation where they're able to bring a mass market or a national campaign to life if you're doing large TV, billboard, radio campaigns. However, on a very local scale, they're not nearly as practical or as efficient. So the idea and the trend is moving much more toward a personalized approach. And it's kind of the same thing that happened years ago in email when you could add the variable data where that email all of a sudden had your name in it. Well, now with texting, it's being demanded by the market. And when you're dealing with a short code, you know, where you text the word something in, you don't get that personalized information. You don't really collect any of that personal information to be able to use in your ongoing marketing efforts. So we're finding that the trend is moving more and more toward, again, this MMS away from SMS, having the ability to get the full pictures, the full graphics. It's in essence creating a mobile mini website all in a text message. And that's really where we're completely focused. And in doing so, businesses have that personal touch but can do it on a large scale. That's something brand new to the industry. And everybody from very, very large, you know, Fortune 100 companies all the way down to the mom and pop stores are loving that because it gives the little guys the exact same advantage as the big box stores that they've never had before.
You know, I think you bring up a really excellent point in that all of the capabilities that you have now for marketing efforts, but I'm not so sure that these companies actually know how to use this emerging and growing technology. So how can companies who would love to learn how to use this to their advantage, how do they understand how to use technologies like yours? Do you all have a consulting group that you can help companies learn how to do marketing differently?
We do in-house. We have found that it wasn't enough to just simply introduce the technology. We had to wrap ideas and marketing efforts around it. So, in essence, you've got the technology team, you've kind of got the design team, as well as the marketing implementation team that brings, you know, hundreds of businesses worth of case study to say, this is how this company did it. Why don't we try it this way? But we're finding that daily we are excited and impressed by clients that say, is it possible to do such and such? And we get very excited by that. Our programmers love that, everything for a challenge. And we're finding that more and more we're going out of the box with some of this new technology, and that's really the most exciting part of it.
That's great that you've got actually have customers who are pushing the envelope for you to develop new applications that they can actually envision new and better ways of doing things that maybe haven't already been exposed or been released yet. I love that idea. Does anybody have any other questions for Andrea? Okay, fantastic. Well, Andrea, tell us a little bit more about what your company does and its full scope of services and how we can get in touch with you.
Sure. Intellitext.com is probably the best way to check us out. It's Intellitext. And what we do specifically is find a way and help businesses to collect opt-in data on their sought-after customers as well as their existing clientele. So cell phone numbers, obviously, zip codes, birthdays, of course, names and things like that. And with this opt-in database, there's a number of different things that they can do with it all through the media or the mobile push of course, this image-based texting, this full-color interactive texting. And when people receive a full-color text message, they're pretty excited about it. They typically hold on to them. They show them. They've got a very viral component to it. So that's really where we excel in our market, in our space, is these mobile mini websites via text. The best way for a client, you know, or a prospective client to get involved or at least find out more information is probably just to hit the website and check it out. And we're also happy to do some consulting just to see if it's a good fit.
And is there a sweet spot for you for your prospective customers?
Well, because this technology is so accessible and so efficient across various different industries, it's really any business that has a product or a service where they need to be back in front of their customers on an ongoing basis. We have statistics that show that our texting technology increases retention and frequency 30 to 60%. On average, which obviously more than pays for the service and becomes a revenue generating source, that needs to be the type of business that's interested in looking for this. How do you get back in front of your clients in a better way? That would be our sweet spot, is who's looking to do that in a way that's not traditional, non-traditional advertising and really works.
Wonderful. Well, Andrea, thank you so much for providing such a wealth of information to our show. It's been a great source of information that I certainly didn't know about, and hopefully our listeners didn't either. I'd now like to move on to Michael Beaton, who is going to tie all this together because he focuses on interoperability and putting all of these technologies together so they can talk to each other, which would frankly not be possible without software. Mike is CEO and founder of Unicom Connect. He has 30-plus years of experience in domestic and international communications and consulting services and has served as VP and GM, General Manager for Network Enable at Unisys Corporation, Executive Vice President of Network Services for GE Capital Technology Management Group, and Senior VP for Global Sales and Business Development for Masergy Communications, as well as Managing Director of Masergy International. Mike was born in South Africa, where he attained a BS in Electrical Engineering from Wits University, and he is now a U.S. citizen. And he joins us this morning to provide a wealth of information to our show. Thank you, Michael, for being here.
Thank you.
So you've heard Randy and Andrea talk about the different technologies and the different ways that software is playing a part in here or there. And we started the show talking about 911 and emergency applications, where you have all different types of technologies and ways of communicating that you are finding is a need for software to tie it all together. So tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, very much. Particularly if you look at the new next generation 911 systems, the challenge there is to meet the population and work with the devices to locate them that they use. When we had landline phones, it was very easy to place a 911 call and people could directly track that to your home. So now what happens when you're in a cell phone and you're traveling in a car at 60 miles an hour and you put in a call? So there's a new methodology that has to be deployed, and the sort of computational equation gets much, much stronger to ascertain where you are. So there's a triangulation-based system that works off cell phones and requires pretty heavy programming to ensure that we can locate where you are. The other example would be, let's say you're in a hotel and you dial 911. Which room are you in? Mm-hmm. Those are the things that we're working on now that need to be resolved with the NG 911 system.
Mm-hmm. Great. And what kind of challenges? I imagine that trying to tie radio to cell to internet to landline must have been a real challenge to try to make them all talk to each other.
Yeah, it's been very difficult. I think the biggest issue that gets associated with those are timing. You know, if we think of the Sprint Nextel type service, the chirping or the bird when you press it, it makes a toot-toot sound before you speak. That takes 850 milliseconds versus when we speak directly on the phones, it's instantaneous. A typical land mobile radio system might run at 200 milliseconds. So if you've got a myriad of these devices and you're trying to tie them together so that you can speak on a one-to-one or one-to-many basis, it gets very complicated. And the traditional way that they've made these things talk together is by tying multiple groups of gateways. Now, as Randy would know, every time you add more hardware into it, the complexity increases, right? And that makes it very difficult to ensure that the conversations take place when they need to take place. Another big factor was that a lot of the systems that were built for interoperability were built for emergency incidents. So it sits in a it sits somewhere in a room or in a box, and when you get the emergency, you have to bring it out and utilize it. And oftentimes, it doesn't work. So you make an 800 phone, you know, make an 800 dial an 800 number for support, and you get voicemail as an example. So it's an industry that's been bereft of good service, and we decided that by doing this on a software as a service basis and manning this 24/7, our clients could get to use the system 24/7 for technical and operational support, and then get the benefits of having a service that's available all the time.
Now, explain what you mean by software as a service. I'm not sure I understand exactly what you mean by that.
Okay, on a software as a service basis, our clients can actually access our service through the internet. When we originally built it, it was accessible by a fixed landlines like T1s, like Randy was mentioning about, or cellular or wireless, okay, or satellite for that matter. But we found that all our clients so far have accepted the software as a service through the internet-based system, and it's worked out very well for us so far.
You know, as you're talking about the emergency 911 need for having this interoperability, I would just guess that the 911 disaster was something that prompted this ability to communicate between different methods. Has that been the major push, and have we really progressed much?
Sure. I think 9/11 kicked everything off, and unfortunately, the progress to date has been relatively poor. It's getting better, but it has been poor. I think that between 2003 to 2005, there was approximately $2.2 billion spent in interoperability in the sort of 56 states and the other territories of the United States, but not nearly adequate enough. And then in 2007, they instituted a public safety interoperability grant for $1 billion. It was a one-time event, but we've got a long way to go in the country here. And the problem has been that the entities that require interoperability, you know, typically first responders, police, fire, EMS, sheriff, you know, those kinds of folks, have tended to build silos of equipment that they've laid out, and it's made it very difficult for them to be interoperable with, let's say, their neighboring counties. Now they are seeking grants to ensure that they can get interoperable with their neighbors. And as you could guess, you know, the most common scenario to look at is if you look at a typical city with police, fire, and EMS, they typically all have different radio systems and different frequencies, and they can't talk to each other.
So anytime you implement your system, you basically have to start an integration effort from scratch with the individual products that they're using.
Very much so. Now, the key thing that we do is, in order to make the integration work, there is no new hardware or updated equipment hardware required to work it. They work with the existing devices. So that was a key factor for us to do that. So what we did is we placed a gateway in there which allows any push-to-talk type device. When I say push-to-talk, I'm talking about Nextel's type service or a land mobile radio or one from Verizon. They have push-to-talk on their phones. You can use a BlackBerry and you can do push-to-talk. The phone actually is a cell phone and it is a radio. So when you use that push-to-talk, you're utilizing the radio component.
Okay. And so, but it also has, and obviously the radio component is different from the cell phone usage. So it has both of the technologies that emanate from that device that you have to account for. Is that right?
Very much so. The two are not compatible. They don't speak with each other. So the idea of taking, let's say, a Nextel IDEN-based system and allowing someone on push-to-talk on that system to talk to, let's say, someone on a cell phone requires a gateway device. And what we do in the gateway device is we take the radio signals and information and transcode them into IP. Mm-hmm. Once they're in IP, we turn them into a landline, similar to what Randy is talking about in his VoIP systems. It is a line on a VoIP system, so the radio channel is now an extension on a phone.
So you're effectively converting each of the technologies into the same language.
Yeah. I mean, it's IP, and it makes it easier for us to do that with the cellular world and the PSTN world, the public switch telephone network, that acronym that Randy mentioned earlier on. Has mainly been analog in the past, but now they're digital devices. So once they're in digital, it's easy for us to just bring that directly in IP. And IP is sort of the common media that we work with. Mm-hmm. So whatever comes in, we transcode it into IP, and then we send it out on a one-to-one or one-to-many basis. And this helps us to work not only with voice devices, but also with data devices and video devices. And, you know, the kind of thing that Andrea was referring to as far as multimedia services for texting is going to become very important, because video is really in demand right now. Hmm. It's a big deal.
And can you still accommodate those people who have those antiquated rotary dial phone and phone lines?
Yeah, we can bring anybody in. It's any device. And that's been very important for us. And a lot of the, you know, when you think about the networks, the new networks being deployed, commercial networks are deployed where the people are, right? Mm-hmm. But if you think about remote areas, in a lot of cases, they don't have cellular coverage and they don't have radio coverage, as an example, but they do have plain old telephone service, another acronym, POTS, you know, but that's been out there. So we can make that phone connect into the system. Again, we take that TDM signal that Randy had referred to early on and convert that into VoIP. So it's a conversion process for us.
So what are the biggest challenges that you've been facing, whether it's from existing software that's out there or hardware or the infrastructure that you're forced to deal with right now?
I think it's the plethora of systems that are out there that has caught the market, and trying to make those interoperable with one another has been the big challenge. And that's why we decided to pick on software as a service and utilize the internet. It's a common media. It makes it easy for folks to get onto, and they take the service as a monthly service. In the monthly fee that they pay, they get their installation, they get their implementation, we do testing, they get all the applications, they get an unlimited number of cell phones that they can connect into the system, unlimited number of landline phones, data phones, satellite phones. So you make it easy and don't charge them on a per unit type basis, but a one-time flat fee. They buy no equipment. Mm-hmm. So it's very easy for them to get operational on that. Of course, the key attribute into the system that we had to build into it was simplicity. It's got to be easy to operate. When we actually do presentations and demonstrations of our system, we bring somebody up out of the audience, and if they can't drive it immediately, we failed.
Hmm. You know, you want to make it simple for the user, but I imagine it was a monumental task and a complicated effort to actually implement such a system where you can connect all of these different methods and technologies, because they, as you mentioned, it's not standardized out there. So everything is a new effort.
Yeah, two key things. I mean, the interoperability and creating the timing mechanism for this, let's call it a soft switch. It's really a soft switch that sort of sits, I'll call it, in the cloud. It's a cloud computing type device. That was the major issue. And the second one that was really important to us, and which Randy had alluded to earlier on, was service. 98% of our service is remote. Mm-hmm. So we can fix anything. Basically, if the unit breaks, we haven't had that happen to us yet, but it'll happen sooner or later. That's just the way things go. Then we just ship a replacement unit. They plug in their components to it, and away you go again. The box has an on-off switch. That's it. Mm-hmm. So nobody can play with it. But the idea of having the simplicity there is the key issue. But again, the service component is probably the most important thing. We've sort of negated the technology and making these devices interoperable, but the key is really the service. Mm-hmm. It's all about the service in the end.
You don't have to wait for the Bell South telephone man to come by with his little van to fix your stuff.
No, not at all. And I mean, we work through, our reseller partners are typically independent telephone companies and integrators on the federal side in a new market that we've moved into. But our monitoring and management is so sophisticated that we notify the carriers when there's problems on their network. We had to do that. Service is just critical for this line of business. Particularly if you consider the criticalness of the data that's being passed in, let's say, an emergency responder situation.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, the application and the value of what you're doing to integrate all these technologies sounds obvious. But I'd really love to know if you have a particular success story that you could share with us that your interoperability has allowed.
Yeah, I can give you a good one. One of our clients is Lincoln County in Wyoming, and a little while ago, they had a plane crash in the county. It's 140 miles by 70. It's a pretty big county. It's below the Teton Mountain Range in Wyoming, spectacular part of the world, Star Valley. They have a tremendous amount of vacationers there in the summer and the winter. In the summer, people go river rafting down the Snake River, and it feeds into this big valley. So there's hikers everywhere. There's hunters. And in the winter, of course, there's cross-country skiing, snowmobiling, you know, sledding of all kinds. When this plane crashed, it brought several complexities with it. It came from out of the United States, and it flew across several states before it crashed, and it had drugs on board, and people got killed. To hear the words from the Department of Homeland Security leader for the county, he said 22 agencies that I'd never heard of arrived in our state. Okay, and they were not interoperable. They all had their radio systems, and they couldn't speak to one another. And that gave them the lesson. So now what they've done is they've built into their system, they have 104 agencies that they can connect at any given time should any kind of incident happen. And they're very much aware of, you know, that things can happen to them from not only from a man-made disaster, but also from a natural disaster. So the ability now to react to any of these environments very, very quickly, you know, is a great step forward to them. And it was interesting enough. It was, you know, you hear about the ideas of selling to the government, even at a local level, and how long it takes for grants to go through. This went through in 90 days.
Wow.
Yeah, so it was pretty quick.
And, you know, none of this would be possible without the software applications. You know,
it's all software. Particularly, you know, looking at what Andrea is doing with texting, with MMS, the big thing now is radios. I mean, radios, typically when you wanted to have frequencies talk to one another, you put more and more electronics into the radio, which made it bulkier, which required more battery power, which is the other big problem. The new radios that are being worked on now are called software-defined radios. And so the really important device is becoming the cell phone, because it is the capability of handling voice data and video. It's all really going to be data, but it gets transcoded into it. And so the idea would be that I would just click on an application on my phone, and I decide if I was going to use ultra-high frequency or very high frequency. And the other thing that's happened, and this has got to relate to Lee, is that hardware components like mixers, filters, amplifiers, modulators, demodulators, detectors, all the stuff that you work with, is all being now done in software. Mm-hmm. So, and that's a couple of years away, probably 3 to 4 years away, where they'll be commercially available. There are some out already that are rather expensive, but that price will come down dramatically. And so the idea would be that I could pick up my cell phone and I can talk to somebody as a cellular call, or as a data call if I was on Wi-Fi, or as a radio call if I picked whichever application I wanted to pick from a frequency range.
You know, because of all of the different technologies and all of the different uses that people have right now for various hardwares and various technologies, I can see this being very important outside of the emergency response and government environment as well. Can you give us some examples of some corporate or normal, civilian type applications for this interoperability capability?
Sure. Think about transportation. So let's just start with, for example, railroads. In a railroad environment, you've got 40,000 linemen, as an example, in our Class 1 railroads working on land mobile radios. The police might be on something different, but what happens if they have an incident? Let's just say that you have a flooding situation, a very, very complex situation for a railway company. They've got to move hundreds of locomotives and cars around, and they've got to bring in all kinds of folks and agencies and contractors and folks like that. So the ability to mix those folks into that environment is very important. You know, here in Georgia, it's quite interesting that 25% of the cargo that comes out of the state port authorities down in Savannah gets moved in by CSX Railways. So a tie-in, for example, between CSX and all the importer exporters at the port authority, and you just start to bring it up, and it gets bigger and bigger. In mining environments, the ability to have different folks in different stages, whether they be working on a hill or underground or at a mill or at a processing plant, is very important. And now you can very easily pick up your cell phone and dial a miner and talk to a miner 7,000 feet underground.
Hmm.
It's interesting. They take the radio signal. They run it. It looks like a coax cable from your TV. It's got holes in it. It's called a leaky feeder system. And the radio signal emanates out of there, so I can speak to somebody underground from my cell phone, or let's say my landline phone, which is very important to those guys. And then last but not least is utilities. I mean, you think of utilities, particularly, again, in situations whereby they could make data and video and voice interoperable. Think of the idea that I could be a utility person, arrive at a blown transformer, turn on my cell phone, and project that image onto a screen, let's say, back at my base. Same kind of thing applies, you know, back, just touching back on the EMS side. If I'm a medical technician in the back of an ambulance, I could project, let's say, a cranial injury to somebody, and I could send that to a hospital. That's priceless to a hospital to get that image out there, particularly whether it be image, you know, as a still image or like a photograph, or if it's in video.
But yeah, I know the medical industry, which happens to be my background, has been working on the wireless and the handheld image device technology for some time, and I know they've been challenged with the security aspects of the wireless technology because of the privacy and security requirements in the healthcare industry. Where do you see that the security features of this kind of technology is up to snuff at this point? Are we where we need to be?
You know, there's two parts that come into play. On our system particularly, folks have asked us, well, how does that information, for example, get, once that radio message is decoded through that gateway, how does it get to your host? And our host sits here in 5556 downtown Marietta. We send it through a 2048-bit encrypted IP VPN. You know? And for a lot of people that ask you that question, you know, you use 64 128 bits at home. This is 2048. It does negate that perspective. However, it's not sufficient enough. For example, when we're dealing in the government, in the federal side or the military side, then we have FIPS compliance, which takes it to another step. But that security piece is there. But it's very, very important, you know, in today's world. And in particular, you know, coming to what Andrea had spoken about on texting, we now find that once you can connect the cellular phone into the radio environment, the cell phone is really the most important device because, for example, in one of the fire departments that we do with, they have about 16 departments in the fire. It's got hazmat, search and rescue, bomb squad. And in a lot of the notifications that they get, they don't want to hear it on a radio. Those radios are very, very busy. They'd rather have it in text. Albeit that it's SMS now, but for example, fire guys are saying to us, we want video. Hmm. And interestingly enough, you know, Randy, they want HD. I mean, it's which is great for our carrier partners because it implies bandwidths. Mm-hmm. But obviously, it also implies the big deal is, you know, they are looking forward to the LTE, you know, the long-term evolution 4G networks, where I think you'll see that the cellular device is going to be the eminent device playing in there. And, I mean, I can use it as anything I like.
So the infrastructure and the hardware guys are continuing to race to keep up with everything that people can imagine and can create in the software world.
Very much so.
It's such a fascinating topic for me. I'm a closet geek techie. And for me, it seems like if you can imagine it, you can create it. At least somebody can anyway.
Right.
Any questions for Michael?
I have one.
Yeah.
In our industry, Michael, this is for Michael. One of the, as an example, what kind of drove software was we had a lot of clients years ago demand that we record all conversations. So that triggered more software, which triggered more hardware. In your industry, do you see any trigger points, whether it's government regulation or customer needs on the horizon?
Yeah, very big, very big. Our clients have the ability to elect to record or not record audio and video. You have to give them that option. And I, in particular, when we started off, we retain the files, but I'm trying to get rid of that as quickly as possible. I never look at them. I don't want to know what it is, and I'd like to get it off our premises as quickly as possible. Particularly now, you know, Randy, when you look at storing video and you're looking at HD, I mean, it's large amounts of storage. But, of course, with a low cost of these data centers now where I can store massive amounts of data, we're going to move to that very quickly. But from a regulatory side, yes, you have to be very careful about what you record and what you don't record, and it really has to be their choice. And as I said, the sooner I can get it onto their premises, the better. So when you really think about the, you know, the federal type guys and when they're running it, they typically would not utilize what we call our software as a service or on-demand service. They'd look more at an on-premise solution, so we would build the entire system, including the host, on their network, behind their intranet, if you will. So that's much more secure environment that they can work through, and we can scale it on that kind of a basis. For example, for a large railway company or a large federal department, they would want to do it that way and block the internet out of it, you know, at all costs, just as a precaution for security. I mean, we have security built in there, but you know, ultimately, in the end, somebody's going to try to hack something, right?
Yeah. Any other questions for Michael? Michael, tell us a little bit more about your company, what you do, and your target sweet spot for your customers, and how we can get in contact with you.
Yeah, we've typically built this situation out. So when we look at software as a service, when we run a TCO model, a total cost of ownership, against premises type of equipment versus our software as a service or on-demand service, we're typically in that over a five-year range, in that 50 to 70% range. The beauty about it is that whatever the tenure of the contract is, you can stop the service automatically, and there's no end of life for you really to take care of. You just continue utilizing your devices. So in that market, it's been very interesting for us. We're very excited about moving into the federal space right now. We have a pretty big partner working with us called Facility Technology Services, Inc. in Washington, FTSI, and they are helping us make a big push into that market. And then last but not least is the international market. The demand for this kind of service in South America, Africa, Middle East, Asia, is far greater than it is here, mainly because of the lack of infrastructure that they have in place. So it lends itself ideally to the cellular wireless type of environment. So we're pretty excited about that. And as you know, you and I had a great trip down to Brazil recently for just that purpose. And yeah, the demand there is very, very high. And we will be going into that market.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. So how do we reach you? And what kind of company are you looking for to sell your services to?
I mean, typically, in the private sector, it really is folks that are using, you know, all the voice data and video type devices, and probably in most cases they're utilizing radio and want to make radio interoperable with the other voice and data and video devices. And then obviously from a public sector perspective, state, local, federal type market, that's really where we're going at. We see security as probably our next biggest push. Security is, and building an actual security application. And that's one of the key things we've done, is we focus more on the applicability. It's not about the technology. It's about the applicability to the user. Mm-hmm. How can I make it do what I want it to do, and just accept the fact that everybody talks to everybody, which can be, you know, an interesting environment,
yeah,
as you can guess.
Great. So how do we reach you and get in touch with you?
Probably best www.unicomconnect, UNICOM Connect. Otherwise, 1-307-885-4444 is our number for the United States.
Okay. Wonderful.
Thanks very much.
Well, it's been a really educational session for me, and I hope for our listeners as well. And it's brought out to light what an incredible cooperation there must be in this industry between the carriers to make sure that the capacity and the infrastructure is keeping up with the capability of the software, and that the hardware and software folks have really got to stay in step so that the new applications that software is allowing the telecommunications industry to get to can be implemented. You can't have one without the other. And then, of course, there's government regulation, which in some cases can be good, in some cases maybe not so good, you know, with the fact that the Asians are ahead of us, but they're also dealing with a bunch of spam. I know we don't want that here, too. So it's all a very interrelated industry that has got to have great communication and great cooperation. And I'm just thrilled to hear about all the technology and the development that, seriously, if you can imagine it, someone can create it. And that's a great thing. So I wanted to thank each of you, Randy Berlin, Michael Beaton, and Andrea Bussey, for joining us today. And our next week's show is going to be a follow-up to our distressed company show that we had last week. And it's going to be the role of human resources in a struggling company. What issues are typically found, and how can we turn those around so that that struggling company doesn't have HR issues to worry about as well. So I'd like to turn it over to Lee to thank our sponsor again.
Our sponsor, Palladian CLO, brings to your industry in-depth knowledge of your industry, of the players in your industry, their businesses, and how the various legal and business issues affect your industry and your business. Palladian sees the possibilities, not just the liabilities. You can find out more information at www.palladiumclos.com.
Fantastic. Well, thank you all again for a great show, and we hope that you listeners have learned something and can reach out to our guests. So they provide fabulous and very well-needed, much-needed services and products. So thank you for joining us on Corporate Conversations, and join us again next week at 10 a.m. Thank you. ¶¶